The Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast has everything you need for this holiday week. Reviews of another outstanding week of games? Yep. Avi, Matt, and Corbett give you a rundown on all of the area round action, including classics like Alan DeSoto, Lovejoy Terrell, and an unbelievable ending between Grapevine Faith Christian and Paris Episcopal. Preview of this week's games? Yep, we've got that too. Allen and Martin, Kennedale and Argyle both square off in rematches, while Lakeridge and Poteet's high-powered offenses face off. And Thanksgiving food talk, we've got that too, and more on this fully stuffed podcast. Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast, the Thanksgiving edition. I would say everybody brought a dish or a side. I'd bring the turkey and people bring the sides. This would be the saddest Thanksgiving dinner ever.
I was going to say, people didn't bring themselves.
Yeah, you would. Matt Wixon is here with me. It's a two-man crew today. You would have brought probably green bean casserole.
I do like green bean casserole, but my wife makes awesome like garlic mashed potatoes, which are really good.
Oh, that sounds really good. Yeah. My mom has abdicated the role of making mashed potatoes because making homemade mashed potatoes is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. She chooses canned yams instead, and I feel that's sacrilege. I think it's fine to have sweet potatoes. I'm all right with sweet potatoes. I love sweet potatoes, but I've got to have mashed potatoes to go along with everything else.
Sure. I'm going to point out, this was not planned, but as a segue, this is perfect. I have an article running in our arts section on Thanksgiving Day comparing Thanksgiving side dishes to your relatives who come to your house.
So
it's not a serious thing. It's one of my humor dealies.
Seeing that you do like green bean casserole and it's not an unwanted relative, what is the unwanted relative dish?
I think candied yams would be one of them. But basically,
you don't like candied yams?
No, well, it's the canned cranberry stuff. I mean, to me, that's the laziest. It's the Uncle Bachelor. That's who I think I named it. The guy, just kind of show up with like a pie with a piece missing or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways.
So does your wife make a homemade cranberry sauce?
We don't have cranberry sauce because nobody really likes it.
Cranberry sauce is super legit, especially homemade. Yeah. The canned stuff is kind of gross. What we thought the week one of the playoffs was really good. Man, week two,
it was
right there as far as quality wins. We'll talk about the games in the area around in part one. No part two today. We'll just rename part three, part two. No coach interview today since it is a short week and we're trying to get our stuff done and get out and about to celebrate the holiday weekend. Matt, you were in a couple of pretty interesting games. Three interesting games.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Alan DeSoto.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we gave Alan and DeSoto short shrift last week.
I tried to pump it up.
You did a couple of times online, and I was just like, yeah.
And when people were giving me a hard time because they were like, you're just trying to hype up a game that's not going to be good. And, I mean, when Alan and DeSoto play, I'm going to hype it up because it's a rivalry.
Yep,
and it's had such great history. But, I mean, I was a little bit in their in agreement in that I didn't think it was going to be close at the end. But I did believe that DeSoto had the capability to give Allen a scare, give him a push in the second half.
And they certainly did
But it was far beyond what I expected. I mean, DeSoto had the ball and had momentum and basically just needed to go in with just score a touchdown in the last 2 minutes. That's not easy. But they were in position to win the game. And I'm telling you, those Allen fans and the Allen team were pretty scared at that point because DeSoto had been moving the ball. And, I really felt bad for DeSoto's kicker. And I felt bad for DeSoto in general.
I mean, he had made some incredible field goals, a 42 and a 44-yard field goal, which was an eye-opener to me. I didn't know that they had a kicker that could do that.
Right, and you know what? After the game, people said, well, maybe this will get DeSoto to commit to the kicking game. And I corrected them. I said, no, actually, Coach Todd Peterman, that was a focus this year. And that's the reason why they had a kicker who could kick, I believe it was a 45-yard field goal early in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good kicker. But I don't know exactly when it happened, but he got injured. I think it was on a punt. I don't know if it was, sometimes punters can get punted extending on their kick or if he was trying to make a play. But he hopped off really badly on one leg. This was before the end of the game. And then he had to come in for that to try to tie it with a extra point kick, and it hit the right upright.
It's not the only game that ended with some shenanigans. We'll talk about later. There was a Taps game that ended in some shenanigans involving an extra point.
Shenanigans, I love that.
That Allen survives and advances. Seth Green comes in the fourth quarter to great success, throws a touchdown pass, His first run was a 67-yard touchdown run. So you might have Green back at quarterback. Mitchell Johnke didn't play poorly, but I think that they certainly were in a lot closer game than they thought.
Interceptions are interceptions, but hit one of them ended up as a pick six, and that kept kind of DeSoto around. After Allen broke out to a 14-0 lead, I thought they were going to roll. DeSoto fought back.
Now, Tristan Wallace played well. He broke a long touchdown run to get them close, and then a 35-yard touchdown pass to Katie Nixon. That was the potential game-tying play. Did not happen.
Right. And what a run by Nixon.
Yeah,
that was
pretty awesome. Cut across the field. It was a fairly short pass, probably about a 10-yard out on the what would be the left side of the field if you were looking at it from
DeSoto's perspective.
The DeSoto's perspective. Then he cuts all the way across the field.
Going backwards a few times.
A few times.
It
gets
amazing.
In the end zone. And truth be told, DeSoto had a chance to get into long field goal range there at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. They crossed into Allen territory, got it down to, I believe, the 38. Then they had three consecutive negative plays or an incompletion. They had a negative 3-yard run, a negative 3-yard run, an incompletion. And then Tristan Wallace was sacked. They're trying to make something happen, a 5-yard loss, and that was the ender.
I was going to say, this is not second-guessing DeSoto's Peterman at all, but given that their kicker was injured, because, I mean, if you're down by one and you have a good kicker, you kick to tie the game.
Right.
But had he known, how bad that kicker was injured probably or what could happen, I'm thinking, well, there's about 2 minutes left, and the way DeSoto was rolling on offense, and you got Tristan Wallace, who's 6'5", and is tough to bring down, and you can roll him out on a 2-point conversion, maybe you go for the win. It wouldn't necessarily be the win because Allen's going to get the ball back in a couple of minutes, but maybe you go for that. But it's a really tough call in that situation. If you've got a kicker who you think you can make it and you can tie the game,
it's an extra
you
point.
Tie the game.
Yeah, it's an extra point. They should have multiple kickers that can make an extra point. It's just an unfortunate break. And in a series between the two schools, DeSoto has never beaten them in this run. They're 0-4 now.
And they've had
in four consecutive years. And they've had such close chances
a
couple of times. Last year's game decided on a field goal from Allen to close that game out. And almost a game-sealing interception that resulted in a catch.
That's right. They ran into each other.
Ben Baby retweeted the video of that where the defenders ran into each other, bounces to an Allen player, makes the catch, and that sets up that final drive. That would have been a game ender on the interception. Just shows you how, Allen has been so dominant getting 55 straight wins. But they've also had some really good fortune their way. They've had, they've made their own luck. There's no doubt about it. But they've had been in game situations where they could have easily lost. It hasn't been them cruising to 55 straight wins, but you have to tip your cap. They're now the second longest winning streak in the nation, currently active winning streak. There was a team that in northern New York that was competing at a smaller classification that got beat in the state finals this week. So they are number two, and they're number two statewide as far as consecutive wins in the history of Texas high school football, still only trailing Salina, but they've been in that spot here for the last couple of weeks. Allen gets Arlington Martin in a rematch of last year. Arlington Martin beats Amarillo 49-27. Eric Walker throws for three touchdowns. Cortland Brooks catches a touchdown catch and 109 yards. We'll talk about that game quite a bit there in part two, but that's one of those games that I think a lot of people were looking forward to a potential rematch of that as well. Remember, Allen had a murderer's row last year where they had to go through DeSoto, Martin, and Trinity just to make it to the out of the region. Well, they don't have Trinity any longer. Trinity, of course, got bounced in the first round, but they still have a very difficult run.
Yeah, and that Martin team last year, I guess we'll talk about it in part two, but gave him a real run. It was tied, if not early fourth quarter, late in the third, and it was just a shootout.
The big question, though, is what's gonna happen with Nick Smith? Nick Smith was the guy who kept them in that game last year. He has not played in the last several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of that bracket, Denton Ryan, this is a game that you wrote on, Denton Ryan and South Grand Prairie at AT&T Stadium. Ryan continues to roll. I think they're legitimizing themselves by every win. They're 12-0 now with a 43-35 win. Spencer Sanders throws for two touchdowns, rushes for three scores in that game. And South Grand Prairie, they had their chances but just couldn't get it done.
Yeah, and I I mean, I think just the best way to describe Ryan is just that they're really solid. You know, Sanders is only a sophomore, but he makes a lot of good decisions, and he throws nice passes, has good weapons. Mm-hmm. They can run the ball when they need to. And their defense got real tough at the right times. I mean, they were tough throughout, but they really buckled down in the second half.
Ken McLaurin, their defensive tackle, is a dominating force, one of the better defensive tackles in the area.
One of the biggest, too.
Yeah, he certainly is a load there inside. I thought for the life of me you were going to get Ryan and Odessa Permian. Odessa Permian does not live up to the hype. On Saturday in Lubbock, they fall to Amarillo Tascosa. So you get Tascosa and Ryan on the other side of the bracket there in 5 or 6A, Division I, Region 1. In Division I, Region 2, I was at the Rowlett Skyline game. We knew Skyline wasn't a vintage Skyline team in Derek Robertson's first year. They had already lost earlier in the season a couple of times,
right,
including a loss to a Jesuit. And I think that was kind of a signal to everybody that this was not the dominating force that you'd seen in the last couple of years. But they had their chances as well. They end up driving the ball down the field, and things just fell apart at the wrong time for them. They were De'Leon Ward was incredible. He almost had 300 yards rushing. He had 291. But on the final drive, you know, maybe he was gassed. Maybe they were trying to throw the ball to keep the sticks alive. Yeah, they try to throw the ball. They get down into field goal range, and then it's time for them to get their kicker out. They end up getting a 5-yard penalty for delay of game while their kick unit is on the field waiting for the snap. They get the penalty. Then they get iced. There's a timeout call to ice the kicker. And then Jalen Penn comes and blocks a 34-yard field goal attempt that would have tied the game. I think that if they would have gotten that kick, they were a good favorite in OT. De'Leon Ward really had been a dominant force. And Rowlett, you know, they moved the ball a little. They still, Logan Bonner threw for 200 yards, but that's 100, almost 100 below his average. Skyline defense was good, and that wind was super fierce from the north. No team really had great success driving into the wind. Rowlett's points, all of them came with the wind at their back, and they go on and advance. This is the second time in school history that they've won a area round game and made it to the third round of the playoffs, but it's the first time in 20 years of playing varsity football that they've had 10 wins. So congratulations there to their staff, Doug Stevens and his kids. Certainly made this year a memorable one for Rowlett. They will face Humble Atascocita, who beat Round Rock Cedar Ridge 41-36 in Round Rock. On the other side of the bracket, we had two area teams, or at least one area team, competing, North Mesquite. And I thought for the life of me, you were going to have to they would have to play well offensively to do it, and right, they certainly didn't. They got outgained 440-99, yet still managed to pull off a win 14-13 against Colleen Shoemaker. Colleen Shoemaker must have a pretty good defense.
They did to Saxey the week
they
before.
They held Saxey to 7 and held North Mesquite under 100 yards of 14 points. Jacquez Gooch, a 2-yard run in overtime. This was a crazy sequence of events. They don't move the ball. They go into overtime, don't move the ball worth anything. They try a 45-yard field goal attempt, which is missed, but the referees call roughing the kicker, which gives them another chance. They go down and score. Jacquez Gooch on a 2-yard run. Shoemaker ends up scoring to tie the game, but they miss the extra point. And that is the game difference. 14-13, North Mesquite advances. They will face Austin Westlake, who really took care of business against the Woodlands, 28-3 there in Bryan. Westlake and North Mesquite, that's going to be a tough draw for them, right?
Yeah. Westlake beat South Lake Carroll early in the year. I think it's going to be a tough situation for North Mesquite. But North Mesquite already has, pretty historic year for them.
Absolutely.
Going into the third round now.
Yeah, and they have 10 wins now. They're 10-2.
10-2.
On the season. Mike Robinson's done a good job, and he knew that this group of kids, Robinson knew that this group of kids with Jacquez Gooch and Drayshawn Manyweather and Gene DeLance, and they've got a lot of talent on that team. And they put it together. You know, their lone losses, I think they lost to Highland Park, yeah, and not exactly sure. It's a non-district loss.
To Mesquite, I believe.
Actually, oh, Mesquite in the game, yeah, in the season finale. Yeah. That's right.
Which was, you know, for Pride.
A little bit of a surprise, but
yeah.
North Mesquite onto the third round of the playoffs. Let's talk Division Two in 6A, Region One.
That's Avi Zalin, by the way.
Oh, right, Avi Zalin comes in. Avi, Thanksgiving. What's your favorite side dish in Thanksgiving?
Not a fan of Thanksgiving.
What? Whoa.
Not a fan. Oh, God. I hope my mom doesn't listen to this podcast. I don't think she does. But, like, my family was never good.
I was going to say, that makes two of us because my mom's not listening to the podcast.
Like, my family was never very good at making Thanksgiving food. They're just not good at it. Like, maybe it's a generational thing where, like,
I don't think we were exceptional at it, like, but it's still, it was just a lot
like
of food.
Like, our turkey was always super dry. And I'm like, why would we make a food that we need to put gravy on for it to taste good? Like,
But gravy does make things taste good.
I'm saying, if do you see what I'm saying, like, if you need to put gravy on it to make it taste good, then why not eat chicken? Chicken's much better than turkey.
I'm not a huge turkey guy. I'm a chicken and dressing guy, because that's like, that's what my family did.
So my favorite side is stuffing. I really do like stuffing.
It's not a side, that's the main course, man.
That's not a main course.
That's the main course of my family.
Oh, it's good. We'll just go with that.
Okay, well then, does mac and cheese count?
Mac and cheese counts. Mac and cheese, an underrated holiday staple.
I think, yeah.
I think because it's not like, well, there goes mac and cheese is gone for the year after Thanksgiving. Everybody has mac and cheese all the time.
Yeah, but sometimes you can really gussy up mac and cheese.
Yeah, you can make it.
I think it goes mac and cheese
very
one.
Very cheesy.
And then I would do mashed potatoes and gravy two, because mashed potatoes and gravy, like, I feel like, I don't know, there's just different variations. Like, you can, like, I like skins in. Like, I like made with red potatoes and leave the skins in and then have a brown gravy. Like, that's very specific, but, like, that's the way I like it done. But,
fair enough.
And maybe some cheesy potatoes. I don't know. Those are good.
Yeah, they're good.
I have a Texas question, by the way, relating to mac and cheese, and then we can get back to regular stuff.
Let's do it. Mac and cheese, Texas?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I always considered mac and cheese a barbecue side, like a side for barbecue, but I found that, like, there, it's not at a lot of places.
No.
Like, that's not a traditional
side for
barbecue.
It's
delicious with
barbecue,
like
potato salad.
Pecan Lodge has, like, mac and cheese, and you know
Lockhart there in Oak Cliff always has a good mac and cheese. Like, yeah, they always have, like, habanero mac and cheese or something spicy.
They have like a really good potato salad there too, by the way. But anyway,
but yeah, it's more potato salad and beans.
Right.
Go with barbecue.
And I don't like beans. So.
Obviously, we're doing this before lunch because this is food talk. Okay. Division 2, Region 1 in Class 6A. The game of the night, there were actually two. One of them, not a surprise, Mansfield played well. Now, this was a little bit of a –
that
I,
it was
I say
that
not a
lopsided,
surprise.
I think.
It was very lopsided. Mansfield took care of business against Flower Mound Marcus. This was a rematch of a game that Marcus won in Week 1 of the playoffs. Mansfield was a little bit different. They had a different quarterback. Dameron Smith did not play in that first game, and they were rolling. They had tons of confidence. Kennedy Brooks, the reason why, and he rushes for 342 and four touchdowns against a Marcus defense who had been great, lights
really good,
out all season, except, you know, their lone loss was to Allen, but they didn't give up those type of numbers to Allen. Mitch Kaysen played well, threw for almost 300 yards, but threw three interceptions. 48-21, Mansfield rolls on.
Mansfield's looking real good.
They look real good. And I think that they're probably the area favorite to make a run to at least the semifinals, if not the finals, there in Division Two.
And we probably talked about this before, but how much does it help in district play to play those caliber of teams that they do and then come into the playoffs, you know, and already have that under their belt?
Especially if you play well. I mean, if you're playing well and you gain a lot of confidence. That's why South Grand Prairie surprised me a lot, because they didn't necessarily upset anybody. They weren't playing poorly, but they kind of got into the playoffs on a skid, losing to all those teams, and then managed to beat Trinity, and that jump started their confidence. For Mansfield, they've been playing well for the last 2 months. They beat all those teams in their district win the district.
You got to stay healthy though, because a lot of times when you're in a district like that, it magnifies your injuries. I mean, or multiplies, and right. you get a lot of players banged up.
Only loss was to Summit. Was that it? And non-district?
No, they have two. They lost to Marcus in the season opener. And their first three games were atypical of the way they played the rest of the season because they were in a real close shootout with Waco Midway.
One by one, right?
Waco Midway team who I don't think is bad. We'll talk about them in just a second. Right, they beat Highland Park.
Right.
I don't think they're a state caliber type team. And then they go play Summit and get drubbed by Summit. A Summit team who we'll talk about a little bit later in part one.
Such a good team.
Yeah, so there you go. Kennedy Brooks with a big game. Dameron Smith, those two touchdown passes, .153. And they advance to face Arlington Lamar. No shock there. Lamar, a little bit closer game than I think what a lot of people were expecting there against El Paso Eastwood. But they do get by 42-35. They now are 11-1 on the season. Certainly one of the teams that have not necessarily flown under the radar, but their loss was a big loss to Martin. But they've played consistently well, especially once they got some early season jitters out of the way. Almost lost to Richland, of course. Mm-hmm. I think that's why maybe people kind of looked past them despite their wins.
Bichelle's been intermittently banged up, too.
Yeah, like, I mean, they've been, he's been up.
Because they asked so much of him, both passing and rushing. Yeah. I mean,
it's hard not to when you have a quarterback of that caliber to kind of lean on him.
Right.
On the other side of the bracket, Denton Guyer and Southlake Carroll. I don't think anybody saw this coming.
Mm-mm.
No, I mean, they just ran over them.
They ran for 550-something yards, mm-hmm. a 554 or something like that. Guyer did in a 48-35 win against Southlake Carroll.
But one thing, after I saw that, I didn't see the game, but seeing the story afterwards, it reminded me, because I watched Carroll beat Cedar Hill the week before.
Right.
And I had thought going into that Carroll-Cedar Hill game that Carroll might have trouble because Cedar Hill can run the ball well because Carroll gave up 600 yards rushing to Trinity.
Right.
And nobody runs the ball better than Trinity. But then I'm like, okay, well, they've made some changes. They did a pretty good job against Cedar Hill. But Guyer comes in there with Sean Robinson and some other guys who can run the ball, and Carroll just couldn't stop him.
Sean Robinson rushes for 263 yards and four touchdowns. Only throws for 65. No scores in the air. But his four touchdowns combined with Noah Kane, a freshman, rushing for .172 and a touchdown, and Myron Mason rushing for 104 and two scores. That was super lopsided. That game, even on the scoreboard, looks a lot closer than it actually was. Mason Holmes threw three touchdown passes. Little Jordan Humphrey did not have a big game. It was Zach Farrar who carried the load, 215 and two scores. But this is a Denton Guyer team who lost to Central and lost to Ryan in the season finale. With two district losses, I didn't necessarily peg them to make a long run. I thought it would have stopped here. But here you go. John Walsh and company, they know what they're doing as far as playoffs go. They get to face San Angelo Central, a dangerous Central team who is now 10-1. Central beat El Paso Americas 51-27 in Midland. Region 2 in Class 6A Division 1, Jesuit and Rockwall. It's a game that a lot of people were looking forward to.
Yeah.
And delivered.
Yeah, it really did. It was kind of a head-scratcher going in as to who you would pick as the favorite.
Right.
I picked Jesuit, but just by 1 point, I think. I thought it was a coin toss game. Rockwall had beaten them by 20 last year. The year before that, Jesuit had won by 20.
And Rockwell's quarterback had been banged up.
Yep.
So you were, it's one of those, if it was in Vegas, might have been off the board because you're not totally sure about the status of him.
Will Reed did come back. He had sat out the opening round game with a shoulder injury, but he was back. 244 and two scores. Caleb Broach is the real deal at running back. He rushed for .166 and three scores. And a lot of people were saying he was running like just an absolute beast, just, shedding tacklers left and right. It's impressive that they can graduate a guy like Chris Warren and replace him with another really productive running back in Broach. Jacob Palish, the quarterback there for Jesuit, will still have next year to come back. They'll be a dangerous team next year as well.
A lot of kids from Jesuit to come back.
Yeah, he threw for three touchdowns and rushed for 104 yards in the loss. 38-27, Rockwall wins. And that is nine straight wins after starting 0-3. They did start 0-3.
They started 0-3.
Yeah.
They were part of, or Coach Webb was part of the early season jinx when we had coaches on.
Yeah.
But they played a lot of really tough teams. Among them, I believe, was Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not not really surprising that they've been on a nice run since then.
And Jesuit had a heck of a year too. I mean, obviously season's over for them now, but
yeah, absolutely
better than expected.
Yeah, 10-1, now 10-2, but win a district championship for the first time since 1994.
Yep.
Yeah, it was really great. A standout year for Jesuit. You got to hand yourself, give Coach Brandon Hickman a lot of credit for that. They will face Rockwall. Will face Spring, who beat Pflugerville Hendrickson 38-14. Spring will be a very tough opponent. They've just got one loss, and that was by forfeit, a game that they were playing against rival Westfield, Spring Westfield, and had a fight. So that is their lone
Westfield
loss.
Westfield had a great game.
They did. Westfield played Lake Travis. Lake Travis ends up winning 28-21 in the bottom part of that bracket. That game was in Brenham on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They will face Waco Midway, which beat Highland Park 50-31. Highland Park's season comes to an end, but congratulations to Randy Allen and crew. You talk about a team that got everything out of what they had there this year. Everybody said, well, this Highland Park team is not as talented. They lost to Pulaski Academy, but then they went on and swept district play, won the district yet again. Henry Allen had a good game, 351 yards and two touchdowns, but Waco Midway made a run there midway first and second quarters where they scored 19 straight points in a variety of ways, a passing touchdown, rushing touchdown, field goal, and safety, and that was really the game difference there. Let's talk.
And Highland Park now gets to move down. So they got a nice little present.
Oh, yeah. No, we can talk a little bit. Use that as a segue to talk about the realignment.
I was going to try to eke it in there.
There's not really a ton of surprises, in the area, but Highland Park moving down, and a lot of, I had somebody come to me and say, Colleyville Heritage is a team that's going to be a team to watch.
They said they're the biggest winner.
Yeah,
so to speak.
I mean, they've got a quarterback coming back, a good receiver coming back. They get out of a district where they were by far the smallest team in a district loaded with good teams. They've got a coach who has had lots of success at the 5A level, to turn Cedar Park into a perennial state power. And they could potentially, depending on how the lines are drawn, be in Region 1. And Region 1, apart from Aledo, is just wide open for teams to make a run. We will talk about one of those teams right now.
Lake Dallas.
Hey, there you go.
Mr. Hahn.
Yeah. Dagan Hahn. He's back. Now, Lake Dallas is actually in Division 2, but with Aledo moving up to Division 1.
It's really wide open.
Yeah, it's super wide open in 5A Division 2 Region 1. Lake Dallas beats Burleson 35-14. Dagan Hahn shows how well he's progressed from his knee injury. He doesn't throw a touchdown, but he rushes for 2 and a 168. It's got to speak well for their chances. They'll face El Paso East Lake, which beat Lubbock Cooper 24-21. On the other side of that bracket, a team like Everman, Keir Crosley has found himself again here late in the season, but they had to win their season finale against Burleson to even make the playoffs.
Right.
They stomp Wichita Falls Rider 42-23. Canyon and Everman will face next week. Canyon beats El Paso Burgess 42-14. In 5A Division 2 Region 2, we had some really interesting games there. A couple of them in the bottom part of the bracket we'll talk about in a second. Forney gets overwhelmed by Lone Star. Jason Shelley throws for 2 touchdowns. Darren Smith rushes for 4 touchdowns in a 55-13 win for Lone Star. They will face Marshall, who took care of business on Saturday against South Oak Cliff.
Convincingly.
Yeah.
I mean,
Sock could not get anything going.
Put up 3 points.
Yep. 35-3. Cameron Haller accounted for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game for Marshall. Be very tough opponent for Lone Star here coming up this week. But that's the opener on Saturday at AT&T at 10:30. Lancaster and Hallsville faced off, and this game was a lot closer than what I expected. But Lancaster manages to pull off the win 30-23. They score the final 17 points. Ryan Ross to Tyrell Alexander for a 7-yard touchdown pass with 8 minutes to go as the go-ahead score. In that game, they will face Terrell. Really interesting match with coaches we'll talk about in part two. But Terrell needed all – this was one of the picks for the game of the weekend. Late on Saturday night, just all sorts of shenanigans. It looked like Lovejoy was positioned to at least make a drive to get a game-winning field goal attempt. They get the ball back late, but the pass is tipped and intercepted. Bowman Sells' pass is tipped and intercepted. Terrell has a short field. They get into field goal range and miss their kick badly, so it goes into overtime. Terrell scores in the first overtime. And Lovejoy scores on like a real long pass play.
Fourth and 18. Like
tiptoes in the back of the end zone.
Right.
That was the DeSoto situation.
To potentially tie the game. But instead of going for the extra point, Ryan Cox says, hey, man, we've just made this crazy play to you know.
Ride that momentum.
Ride the mo. It does not work out. Nikavian Morris bats down the two-point conversion. Terrell advances. Matt, your thought on going for two in the first overtime period when you don't have to?
Well, I think like what you were saying, I think some coaches believe there truly is something tangible to that momentum when you're feeling confident if you make a big play like that.
Right.
That was, I mean, because they almost – it was in a, not hopeless, but a very difficult situation. When you got
pretty
fourth
hopeless.
And really
yeah.
long, and you think, that came through, it's magical, it's fate. We're going to go for two right here. You know,
or
while
maybe that
the
you just
going.
Figure, like, man, that the defense must be deflated.
Right.
You know, a lot of people like to Monday morning quarterback coaches' decisions, but especially two-point conversions. I think that is all contextual. It is the coach is on the field. He knows how tired and injured his guys are.
Right.
He knows their mood. He can sense things way better than
the
what
other
fans
thing is.
Can.
Most coaches go into a game with a 2-point conversion play, a special 2-point conversion play. Sometimes they burn it
right.
in the game because they need it for some.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the case with them, but they felt like we've got a 2-point conversion play that we feel is an 80%, 90% type.
And they've
thing.
Got and they probably had one of the best players in the field That's, making that decision to Bowman
right,
Sales.
Right.
I mean, he is a guy who is. You know, long been one of the area's best quarterbacks,
right.
and to put the ball in his hands to potentially
I
win
a
game.
I think when you have a quarterback who is that experienced and that versatile, who can run the ball, I don't blame him ever. I mean, I remember years ago when Allen lost to Carroll in overtime at I think it was at Cowboy Stadium. It's mm-hmm. that long ago, and they had Matt Brown, who was one of our best quarterbacks in the area, and who was a run pass threat. I would have done the same thing. If you can put the ball in the hands of you believe one of your very best players, and you get one play to do it. I can't argue with that.
Let's go Division One in Class 5A. Region One, it's Aledo and everybody else. Aledo all over Denton, 52-3. They look, for all intents and purposes, like a pencil
Aledo.
Of men
right.
all the way to the state semifinals. They'll face Abilene Cooper, who beat El Paso Del Valle. Burleson Centennial beat Saginaw Boswell, 28-10. Centennial will face Canyon Randall. Canyon ISD having a good playoff run. Randall and Canyon. Both in the playoffs. In our area, Division One, Region Two, Mansfield, Summit, and Longview. That Summit team, a really good team. Derek Johnson with a 131 and two scores, but Longview gets it done, 21-20, and they will advance to face, drum roll,
Wiley.
And Wiley's always around. Bill Howard, I don't know how he does it. But, you know, they make the runs. They always make
and
runs
like,
in the playoffs.
And it's like, you know, not too long ago, are they going to make the playoffs? And now it's like
yeah, and now they're in the third round, 24-17 over Rockwall Heath. Emilio Ames throws for three touchdowns. Connor Callahan seals the win with an interception with 2:19 to go. That improves them to 8-4, and they were really on the bubble there for making
right.
the playoffs.
Do we say
in
who
the last
they're
two.
Playing against?
Yeah, they're playing Longview.
Okay.
That'll be a very
no in the
game.
Last round. I'm saying, I just wanted to
who
Wiley played in the last
Rockwall
round.
Rockwall Heath.
Yeah, I just wanted
to
make that clear.
Yeah, and the other side of the bracket, you've got Mesquite, Poteet, and Wiley East in one of the games of the weekend. Matt, you were at that game.
That was a fun game. Mm-hmm.
That was a fun game. Walter Dawn doing what Walter Dawn does.
He's a pretty amazing player, and I thought it was funny in the press box early in the game. They were saying, you know, he kind of runs out of bounds sometimes, kind of avoids contact. And I mean, I was
he's like 5'7".
Well, he's not very big. And also, if you're going to get the ball 30 to 35 times, you know, running and receiving, you have to make some good decisions.
Did they line him up in the backfield, or were they flexing
mostly
him out?
In the slot? And
okay.
And Cody Groves, Poteet's coach, has said part of the reason that they started doing that a few weeks ago is to protect him a little bit,
right?
Because it's getting late in the season and they need him. They
well,
need
Coach Groves told me
hands.
That they had moved their safety to tailback, that he'll be their tailback next year.
Mm-hmm.
That they moved him and then moved Dawn out of the
Jordan Rollins,
yes.
right? Yes.
And they moved the tailback, you know, Walter Dawn out of the tailback position into the
yeah.
slot to be able to utilize him. But he got tons of carries.
He
rushed for over 100 yards.
And he goes back there, you know, sometimes.
Right.
But they, you know, they're just smart. They get him the ball as much as possible. And now he's playing defense, too. You know, he played cornerback in the second half, and
he
then
had that safety,
and then he was at safety. Yeah. He caught the basically the clinching interception.
That he had accounted for 354 total yards, set up the game-winning field goal with 26 seconds left,
That's why he's our offensive player of the week.
Yeah. I think Wiley East, like Poteet's team.
Yeah, I really like Wiley East team too. I mean, both of those teams, have a lot going for them. You know, dynamic players. Eno Benjamin, of course, for Wiley East continues to impress, and in his final game of his junior year, he rushes for 31 times for 239 yards and 4 touchdowns.
That was awesome.
He's a very good player.
Caleb Fletcher, Poteet's quarterback, I think is very underrated too. He can do some nice things. He can run the ball and also throws a nice couple of routes. I thought he was throwing really nice passes.
Well, the great win for them, but they get a monster next round in Mansfield Lakeridge. Lakeridge lays 77 on Tyler John Tyler. A game I thought here was going to be a real close fought game. I thought it was going to be a shootout, but I thought they were going to be close. 77-51.
But one gun didn't have any bullets in it.
51 points. They had some bullets, but not nearly
77.
77 is a lot.
Against a good team.
And it wasn't even all Jet Duffy.
It was Duke Carter rushing.
Duke Carter had a great game.
He rushed for 197 and 5 scores. Jet Duffy rushed for 3 scores as well and over 100 yards.
Their ground game had over 500 yards. Yeah, I mean, they just the ability to beat you with not one but two different guys there is huge.
And it not anywhere close. I mean, the score kind of indicates that it might have been kind of close at one point. It wasn't. 21-0 lead real quick. For Lakeridge, and they never looked back
Thor.
In that game. Yeah, Kirk Thor, man, he's got his kids going.
He has the best pictures, the best post-game reaction pictures. Just a very happy guy. Well he's always winning because they're
undefeated. He should be happy. They're winning ball games.
I don't know. There's just some coaches look at all these pictures, and some coaches like, yeah, I did my job. Whatever.
That's right.
This guy's like, yeah, he's like patting his guys on the head. And
after
a
game,
like that.
I think I was at their game they won against Lancaster. And after the game, he was in the locker room. I was just waiting to talk with him, and he was going around basically thanking and congratulating every player. And yeah, I mean, he looks like he'd be a really fun guy to play for.
Yeah, he was tired of being in administration, moved back out
to
take that Lakeridge program and has built them up from scratch. And they're certainly playing well under his leadership. Let's talk 4A Division I real quick. My favorite region, especially this coming week, part two, we'll talk about the games that are coming up there. But Argyle played Pittsburgh and wins 59-34. Taylor Swift with 3 rushing touchdowns.
Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm. Kennedale will be their opponent, 47-28.
Dang it, Matt.
Kennedale Argyle in a rematch of last year's great playoff shootout. You've got Kauffman advancing past Alvarado, 15-10. Kauffman will face Texarkana Liberty Ilo, who took care of Sanger pretty easily on Thursday night, 48-9. Big performances there by their quarterback and their tailback. So the 4 best teams in that region are now in the regional semifinals and should be a really, really interesting shootout in those 4 games. In Division I, Region I, no teams in our area really, but it's worth noting that Stephenville fell. Stephenville now 4-7 on the year. The people are burning the coaches in effigy there probably. Stephenville, they're serious about their footballs.
Yeah, I saw them on ESPN a couple years ago.
So let's go to Class 4A, Division 2.
You want me to pull it?
Salina and Monahans. Big win for Salina in Abilene, 49-21. Connor Pingleton again with a big performance there. That puts them at 12-0 on the season. Probably our best 4A school, regardless of Division 1 or Division 2. They get to face Perryton, who in the Trader Bowl played in the middle part of Oklahoma and Cache, Oklahoma, 58-35. Perryton beats Anna. Anna, after their opening round win that improved them to 3-8, they end up falling to Perryton, and hopefully that game will be played.
Yeah, but it was their first playoff win since 76.
So Salina and Perryton, are they going to play in Oklahoma again? Because Perryton is in the tippy-top corner of the panhandle. Let's hope that they play in Vernon or someplace like Childress.
Wichita Falls, maybe?
Wichita Falls, great spot. Sweetwater and Iowa Park. Sweetwater and Crum. Crum, 35-21 win over Iowa Park. Hayden Knight rushes for 237 yards and 2 scores. And that will be an interesting matchup. Sweetwater, pretty good, unbeaten on the season. Real quick, 3A. We don't normally talk 3A, but Sunnyvale continues to roll on, beat Eric Sardinia, the coach there for Dangerfield, who is former Rowlett offensive coordinator, 38-13. They'll face White Oak, who beat Pottsboro, surprised unbeaten Pottsboro, 24-9.
Oh, man.
Other side of that bracket, Callisburg.
Friends of the podcast.
Yeah. Callisburg rolls on 41-8 over Big Sandy Harmony, and they'll face Mineola, a team that a lot of people are saying is going to be a state title contender. Mineola with a close game against Whitesboro, but beats him 21-15. Real quick, Taps. Do we know Taps? Do we love Taps? We do.
It was a good game between Grapevine Faith and Parish Episcopal.
We'll get to that in just a second. Let's talk Taps Division I first. Bishop Dunn rolls on 51-22. Caleb Evans, their quarterback, accounts for 7 touchdowns. They will face Houston St. Pius X, which beats Midland Christian, a district rival there of Bishop Dunn. They beat them 51-35. The other side of the bracket. I bet their kids do that all the time. Prestonwood Christian, they score on their first 8 possessions in a 58-20 win over San Antonio Central Catholic. They'll face Houston St. Thomas, who shut out Fort Worth Nolan. Now, we will talk Division II. Probably the craziest ending of any game that I've heard of this year, and that is Grapevine Faith Christian in a rematch against Parish Episcopal. Take you back to the regular season. It was just 3 weeks ago that Parish Episcopal won on a touchdown with 6 seconds to go in that game, gave them that district win. It was Grapevine Faith Christian's only loss of the season. Well, Jeremy Hodge scores on a 1-yard touchdown with 17 seconds left, putting Parish Episcopal up 40-38. The extra point attempt is blocked and returned 100 yards by Grapevine Faith Christian, tying the game at 40. And then they get the ball back after the ensuing kickoff. Jake Mitchell, a 51-yard touchdown catch with 2 seconds to go. Grapevine Faith Christian, 46-40 against Parish Episcopal. And they will advance to face Fort Worth Christian, who beat Austin Regents 41-30.
That is an amazing finish.
Absolutely.
And you know what? It's interesting. You don't think about that, or I don't a lot. You know, if a team goes up by two, right? They went up by two with that Parish did.
No, you think you just kick the extra point and
you save yourself
a field goal. Yeah,
but that it can be returned, that they can get points off of that.
That's crazy to tie the game back up and to just deflate yourself after it's a killer.
Great gosh almighty, what's the Plano East game?
The other score of note on the bottom side of that bracket is Dallas Christian beat Houston Lutheran South 70-39 in Taps Division III. TC Cedar Hill and First Baptist are lined up for a rematch. Cedar Hill beats Fort Worth Lake Country 42-14. First Baptist, same score, 42-14 over Colleyville Covenant. And on the bottom part of the bracket, you have teams that aren't from this area. Beaumont Legacy Christian and Shiner St. Paul Advance. That's it for part one. Part two coming up, Games of the Week. Part two, an abbreviated part two, because the big-time sports guys are just sitting out in the hallway, and if Kevin Sherrington wants the studio, they're going to kick us out. Right, Matt?
I think so.
Okay, part two, Division I, 6A. We've got Amarillo Tascosa, Denton Ryan. This would be an interesting one. It's in Amarillo, though. Lost the flip.
Yep.
In Amarillo's Bivens Stadium. Should be cold and icy, so that does not bode well for Ryan. Tascosa runs the ball quite a bit. I'm going to probably pick against Ryan because their fans are sassing me a bunch on Twitter.
Ooh.
You know, just a little bit. You know, it ensures their chances of winning, supposedly.
Right.
If I pick against them, Arlington, Martin, and Allen, rematch of last year. Allen, they looked vulnerable last week, but I don't know where Martin is. They've got 2 losses
health-wise
in the season. Health wise, they've got to be roaring, to be able to. To beat Allen, but they took care of DeSoto in this early part of the season. They're certainly a team that has the talent to challenge Allen. There's no question about it. In Region 2, you have Rowlett and Atascocita facing off in Waco at 1 p.m. Saturday. The other game there in Waco at 2 p.m. on Saturday is North Mesquite and Westlake. I don't know about Rowlett and Atascocita. Atascocita is kind of new on the scene as far as this deep of a run. Rowlett offensively can certainly sling the ball around if the weather conditions are amenable to it. Kobe Morrow did leave the game, getting squashed by Joe Wallace in the second quarter. Kobe Morrow being Rowlett's running back, so his health would be
a
concern.
He did not return after that?
Did not return as 1,500-yard rusher. That would be a big loss for Rowlett if he was out this week. North Mesquite and Westlake. Westlake, they beat South Lake Carroll earlier in the season. Todd Dodge is their coach. That's going to be a very difficult matchup for Mike Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, maybe North Mesquite will have some more success moving the ball this week because the defense won't be the same, but that Westlake team is going to score some points. They're going to have to score some points just to stay in the game.
Division 2, Region 1 semifinals. San Angelo Central and Denton Geyer. Central only one loss in the season, 11-1. Geyer, 9-3, but coming off their biggest win of the year.
Well, given what they did against South Lake Carroll, it's hard to pick against Geyer. Just, you know, if you're talking about where they are as a team right now,
ruining every Geyer mom's chances to do Black Friday shopping.
Yeah,
game is at 2 p.m. on Friday, right in the middle of prime shopping time.
Well, you get up at 5 a.m. What the stores open at like? Are they even? They're open on Thanksgiving.
They're open on Thanksgiving afternoon. Yeah, it's bogus.
The deals aren't that good.
Avi, quit ruining America's economy with your pessimism.
I mean, go online; it's easier.
Arlington Lamar versus Mansfield. Lamar only one loss in the year. That was to Martin, but Mansfield certainly probably the favorite in this game.
They're playing as anybody right now.
Yeah, these games are back to. They're not back to back, but that's a 5:30 start on Saturday. At AT&T Stadium, which is hosting a lot of games. So even if the weather
is... 6 games, I think.
Yeah, four games on Saturday and two on Friday.
Yep.
In Region 2, they're in Division 2, Rockwall and Spring. Rockwall made this run last year, and this is where it ended. Spring 11-1, and this game is at Friday at Waco ISD.
Was it Spring they played last year?
I don't believe so. I thought that meant Westfield.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they lost to Westfield last year. And Waco Midway and Lake Travis on the other side of that bracket. In 5A, Division 1, Region 1, that's Aledo and everybody else. Region 2, Wiley and Longview. Let's see if this Wiley train can continue to roll on.
My head says to take Longview because I think Longview, they're just really tough. But I'm not going to say my heart takes Wiley, but just there's something about the way they play at the end of the year. And they've done it in other years where they've beaten teams where I did not think they were going to be able to play with that team, and they come out with a win. So
the other side of that bracket is probably the game of the weekend, in my estimation, Mesquite, Poteet, and Lake Ridge. Poteet with three losses, but they've certainly played well as the season has gone along. Lake Ridge is rolling at 12-0, and that game is at 9 on Saturday night.
At the earliest.
Yeah,
gosh,
probably 10 at Saturday
it.
Night. In Division 2, Region 1, you've got Lake Dallas facing El Paso East Lake. That's in Midland on Friday, and the other side is Everman and Canyon in Vernon on Saturday at 4 p.m. Region 2, Lone Star and Marshall, both 11-1. It'll be a big test for Lone Star.
Yeah.
You know, Marshall's going to be able to bring some heat. Marshall beat Longview earlier in the season. That's one of their wins. That's a 10:30 start on Saturday. Terrell and Lancaster in a really interesting matchup. I'll write on this later this week, but Lancaster's coach Chris Gilbert came from Terrell. Terrell's coach, Mike Shields, came from Red Oak, which is a team that competes against Lancaster. And that was a couple of years after they had a coach in between. But both coaches have found really nice spots where they are and have turned those programs into, you know, quite the football programs. Lancaster had not really had wasn't considered a great football program. Gilbert has taken them to a state final,
right.
And Terrell is now 11-1 and rolling. They won the district championship there. Their lone loss is to Kauffman, oddly enough. In the 4A Division 1 playoffs, we talk about that Kauffman team. In Region 2, Kauffman is facing Texarkana Liberty Ilo, both at 11-1. That's at Roy City on Friday night. The other one is Kennedale and Argyle. It's a 7:30 start at SMU's Ford Stadium.
That's spicy.
Really good. Really good game between those two. And
now, and Q might not be healthy for that, though.
Might not, but they've got other options
at
running back.
Right, they got other horses in the stable.
Yeah, Dalen Wells has had a good run here in the last couple of weeks. And Argyle, you know, that was a game that they barely won last year. So, you know, it's a coin flip game in my estimation. And the Division II playoffs, you've got Crum advancing in Region 1. They'll face Sweetwater. Their Crum is 7-5. Sweetwater is 12-0. Salina on the other side of that bracket, 12-0, facing a 7-5 Perryton. I think you can see where a Sweetwater and Salina final would be a pretty salty one. In Class 3A, Division 1, Region 1, you've got Brock and Wall facing off. Those teams are out of our area, but Brock is the number 2 ranked team in the state, and Wall is 12-0 as well, one of the few matchups between unbeaten teams. Our area is Region 2, which is Sunnyvale facing White Oak. That game is Friday night in Van. Some TAPS matchups real quick. You've got Bishop Dunn facing St. Pius X and Crockett on Saturday. Preston Wood Saturday afternoon as well, playing in Palestine against Houston St. Thomas. A Dunn-Preston Wood matchup would be fitting for another state finals appearance. In Division II, you've got Grapevine Faith Christian facing Fort Worth Christian, both at 11-1. That's at Saturday at 2 at Pennington. Dallas Christian faces Houston Northland Christian in Crockett, a doubleheader in Crockett on Saturday. And then a pretty salty matchup in the TAPS Division III playoffs semifinals is First Baptist and TC Cedar Hill, both at 9-3. Both teams have played each other already this season and know each other well.
Yep.
Final thoughts, Matt?
The first 2 weeks of the playoffs have been about as good as a composite of any 2 weeks that I can remember.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, and so I'm looking forward to another. The setup looks like it could be some great ones again this week.
Yeah, it really has been good. Okay, for Avi Zalin and Matt Wicks, and I'm Corbett Smith. Thanks for listening.